Hi, welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt. Today we have the author of her very first novel, Small Silent Things, by Robin Page. Robin, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Small Silent Things, this your first published novel. Tell me a little bit about Small Silent Things.
There are three interwoven storylines, and it is essentially the story of a woman who has survived a fair share of trauma in her childhood, who then, when her mother dies, she begins to kind of remember a number of things. And then she meets a Rwandan refugee and they forge a friendship. And he is looking for his daughter who disappeared during the Rwandan genocide in 1994.
Would it be fair to say that maybe all people growing up have challenges?
I think that is fair to say. I think, but for me, I just think it's very important to kind of honor that there are different levels of trauma and not everyone kind of survives them and not everyone is super resilient. I mean, I think things like friendship can certainly help you recover from traumas. But I also think it's important to realize that different people experience different levels of trauma.
Well, we start out being introduced with Jocelyn. And Jocelyn, she just lost her mother. And she's thinking back on things and maybe how poor they were. That kind of messes with her mind. And now she lives in California in a privileged neighborhood. Is that what you would say?
Yes, I would say that. A very privileged neighborhood. Yeah, the Pacific Palisades, which I think is the number one or number two real estate market in the nation.
Jocelyn was a tennis player. She went in for some therapy, and now the therapist says, hey, why don't you go back to playing tennis? Take your mind off things.
Yes, that's correct. She plays amateur ladies tennis, which is pretty popular here. I don't know about nationwide, but it's pretty popular in California. She kind of refuses mental health help in the form of drugs. So the therapist suggests that she exercise, you know, to return to this, to socialize, to make friends, and to, yeah, get her mind off of things.
My feeling also is that you really shouldn't be using drugs, pharmaceuticals. You never can tell what they can do to your body. What's your feeling on something like that?
I think it depends on, again, the level of trauma. I think some people need guided prescription drug help from psychiatrists. And I think especially in the African-American community, we are reluctant to talk about mental health issues, going to see a therapist, taking pharmaceutical drugs that have been prescribed. Because I think the idea, especially for African-American women in our culture, has been one that says we can survive anything. We are resilient. We can endure. And I think there are some problems with that perception.
So as a African-American woman yourself, what are some of the challenges being African-American?
Well, there are many. I mean, I think we're living in a culture right now that is ultra divisive and we don't have equal pay. We are in debates over things like reparations, which is odd. And I think it is particularly difficult for an African-American woman to complain or suggest that, you know, I mean, to white culture, I think there is the idea that we just can survive and we're fine and it's okay. And I don't think that's true. I think we carry a lot of trauma. I think we put up with things from day to day. Even for myself, I think even in this current climate, you know, I've had experiences with other people being racist. And it seems like we should be able to get beyond that, but it's always here.
Jocelyn, she signs up for tennis, which I've tried playing tennis before, and that is a tough sport. That's a lot of work.
Well, it is a lot of work, but it's amateur ladies tennis, so it's a little bit different. It's there are all sorts of levels. I play tennis, you know, I'm older, and it's fun and exciting, and it's good exercise, but it's certainly not like pro tennis. It's just, you know, you get drilled by a pro, and then you go and play other ladies roughly your same age. So it's sort of like a amateur golf league or whatever, but it's pretty popular. I mean, there's lots of women who do it.
Jocelyn goes to a club in Palisades to join up with their league, if you will.
Yeah, you're just signing up for a, they have all different types. They have USTA leagues. They have what are called Marine leagues. They have West Side leagues, and they're generally put out by mostly private clubs, but then there are public clubs who participate as well, and they play one another. So if there's a club in the Palisades, they might play the clubs in Malibu, and then you meet once a week and you play and you compete like as you did when you were kids and you played soccer or baseball or whatever.
At the club at Palisades, they say, well, there are a couple other black members. Jocelyn isn't really introduced to them, and she's wondering if they even exist.
Right. I think for me, the purpose is to kind of call out what I think is still really present in our culture, which is just that we have scenarios where it is often encouraged to exclude certain groups of people, whether that's women or African-American people in general, or Jewish people in general, or, I mean, whoever the minority is, there are still organized groups that are intentionally trying to exclude those people. And I think we should take note of that rather than sort of pretending it doesn't exist. And it often exists in the private club environment.
Small Silent Things. Now, this is your first published novel. You have written other works before that weren't published. With Small Silent Things, we're looking at Jocelyn, who was raised pretty much in Cincinnati. She moves out west. And we also have maybe somebody that she meets from Rwanda. So you're looking at three different stories in this book.
That is correct. I am from Cincinnati, as you know. So Cincinnati tends to be a setting for most of my work, just because I'm more familiar with it. And then I lost my brother to AIDS in 1994. And during that very difficult time, I was very aware of the Rwandan genocide that was going on at the same time. And I think that has stayed in my memory and sort of melded those two traumas together for me. So it's going to be a part of my work.
Jocelyn meets somebody in her building.
He is the Rwandan survivor. He has sort of post-traumatic stress hallucinations where he believes that he sees from the time of the genocide, the people that they called the Pygmies or the Twa.
When I was reading Small Silent Things, Jocelyn talks about how green Cincinnati is with the river that runs through it. And he's talking about Rwanda, which is also green with a brown river, but he failed to mention the bodies floating in it.
Well, that actually was something that I read about when I was doing research for the book, and I wanted to kind of include that image that there were so many bodies coming down the river during the genocide of people who were being killed, who were being executed. And I wanted to also link kind of the settings in that way with the two rivers. I think for people who are from Cincinnati, if you move anywhere else that isn't the Midwest, for me, the first thing I missed when I was away was just how lush it is and green it is. I just wanted to sort of tie those two settings.
And as far as California is where you live, maybe a desert type area, not as green, maybe a lot of cityscape?
Well, I personally live in a less city-ish location, but it still isn't green. We have just a very different landscape because we don't have a lot of rain. So everything is more brown. And it isn't that it's beautiful because we have the beach, but it's just very different. And I kind of remember when I first moved here, getting off the plane at Cincinnati and kind of having a sigh of relief, sort of like, oh, I'm here. You know, it's just very different. You know, I grew up with lots of trees and lots of grass and lots of rain, and I miss that. I think when I write, I'm kind of trying to return to some things that I miss.
This contemporary book, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Would you say what type of book? It's not really a thriller.
It's literary fiction, and I'd say that it deals with politics. I think it's an affair book, and I think it's about trauma. I think it's mostly, I wanted to kind of question the idea of resiliency. Do people really get over the things that we do to them? Because for me, presently, we are still repeating the things that we've done in the past that have led to tragedy. And I don't know why we're not noticing that, I guess.
Your other books that you've written, were they also along the same vein as Small Silent Things?
Almost everything I've written has dealt with the AIDS crisis in some way, because I think I've been trying to deal with that grief, right? I think people, again, imagine that you just get over those things. But for me, that's, you know, the loss of my brother will stay with me for the rest of my life. I can deal with that crisis and what I went through at that time by writing about it. Almost everything I write deals with that. But I would say this is the first book where I thought about politics in our country versus another country, and about people who are neighbors who ultimately either heal one another or kill one another.
Looking at that with this country's politics and other countries' politics, such as Rwanda or other places, what would be the comparison for you?
For me currently, it would be that we have a government at this moment that is encouraging divisiveness. And I think that not everyone in government, obviously, but I think there is a tone in our country right now with the mass shootings every few weeks and people pitting one another against each other in order to acquire and keep power. And I think that is exactly what happened in Rwanda. I think that any time that people in power are pitting the citizens of a nation against one another in order to retain that power, we have serious problems. And I think in the United States right now, we have a serious issue with violence and with divisiveness. And that was the same situation in Rwanda in 1994. And I think that continues to be the same situation in other parts of the world.
What are the politics now in Rwanda like?
Well, I'm not Rwandan academic, but I do know that they are very interested in reconciling. I think that they work very hard towards that and towards honoring what happened there. So I think that's something that we should use as an example. For me in the United States, and I think the issue of reparations is a perfect example, we do not want to acknowledge what we've done in the past. However, we're perfectly happy to acknowledge what other people have done in the past. And so for me, I think that we could use as an example the ways in which the Rwandans are working towards reconciliation between each other. And we need to do that as well. And one of the first steps is to acknowledge a wrong that has been done in the past and then to pay for that wrong. And I don't like the argument that says, well, you know, that Mitch McConnell, let's say, makes, I didn't do any of that slavery stuff, is what he says. The white culture at large has benefited from slavery, and therefore there has to be some payment towards it. It's a great wrong that was done. And until we acknowledge it, we're going to have serious issues in our country.
You know, if you look at it that way also, I mean, look at the injustice that was done to the indigenous community, the Indian population, when that was here.
Absolutely, yeah.
And was that far worse than anything else, or would you say it's about on the same level?
I personally wouldn't want to distinguish between the two in that way. I try not to think of things as kind of like a contest of who had it worse. I think we are very willing, for example, to say whatever happened during World War II, you know, whether that was art stolen, and I talk about this in the book to some extent, whether that was art stolen from the Jews or property stolen from the Jews, we should give that back. And certainly we should. That should be given back. The Germans, the people who benefited from those things, need to return those things. But in our own country, we don't want to say the same about slavery. And we don't really want to say the same about the Native people either. And I think, you know, we have to stop that. We have to acknowledge that this is a wrong done and honor how serious the wrong was. And reparations would be the first step, I think.
Let's take a turn now. Talk about your brother who passed away from AIDS. How long ago was that?
That was in 1994, so the same year as the Rwandan genocide. And so I think that's why they're both sort of together in my memory. And at that time, AIDS was perceived in a very different way than it's perceived now. And that was a very difficult time because people were fearful and they were very mean and they were very, I don't know, just horrible. They didn't want to touch my brother. I met many men who were dying of the disease that people didn't even want to look at. It's very different now. And I think people don't realize that today we have evolved in the way that we see that disease. And I'm happy about that. But for me, it was a very hard experience.
I was watching something today on television, and I think it was a advertisement for travel to maybe Alabama, and they have a look back, and they have a white child and a black child in front of a couple of water fountains, and one says coloreds only, one says whites only. And I think, my gosh, how could they think that? And along AIDS, how could they think that?
It was definitely very similar. I just wrote an essay, which is going to be published online at Shonda Land's website. I talked about just that. People were having discussions about whether or not they should use the water fountains. People were asking if you could hug someone with AIDS. People were asking if sweat carried the disease, if spit carried the disease. I mean, we were very isolated, except for, you know, I'd say from the gay community. And it was a very difficult time. So again, I'm very happy we've evolved, but that still existed. And that trauma from that time for me, even though I've recovered from it, certainly it still exists. And I remember it and I can still feel it.
Robin, you've done some research on AIDS. You know, you don't hear about that too much anymore, do you?
Well, I hear about it and I read about it. But I think there are medicines that are happening now that are really very exciting. I have heard that they are getting close to a potential cure. Again, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not certain of everything, but I've heard that there will be access eventually, but it kind of isn't working now. I know that the medicines are a lot better than when my brother was sick. And my brother died in 94, and I believe the protease inhibitors came out in 96. So it was, I always have felt sort of like if he could have lived just a little bit longer, right? We might have gotten lucky. Because there was just nothing at that time. But now I know there are many people who are truly living long-term with AIDS, but I don't think that we should forget that there are still many people dying of it as well.
The research that you did with Small Silent Things would be what?
Well, I read a lot of books. I read a lot of books like Machete Season, which were personal narratives by the perpetrators, because I thought that was very important. And then I read personal narratives of the people who had survived the genocide. And then I did a lot of research as well on abuse. And I also read a couple of affair books because I wanted there to be a relationship in the book. I was interested in reading. I read a book called Unmastered. And then I read another book, which was a nonfiction book on desire. And then I returned to read 9½ Weeks, which was very different than the movie. I had never read that book. And that was very different. So that was interesting. So I just read as I went along. I don't like to read a lot of fiction when I'm writing, but, you know, I'm always reading something.
As you were writing Small Silent Things, a lot of authors will have that person, such as Jocelyn, such as her child, in the back of their minds. And when they go out, when they're shopping, when they're doing other things, they actually become that person. Was that something that you did?
I wouldn't say it was quite like that. For me, I always have an issue that I'm interested in when I'm writing. So in this case, I would say one of the issues was resiliency and how women act in the world. And so I think I would go out and try to take note of the women that I met or the people that I saw. For me, it's almost like I have this character and I try to think about how that character might behave in the world wherever I am. And that kind of works for me.
When you would get home with that information, was that something that you wrote down? Was it just something in the back of your mind? How did that evolve into Small Silent Things?
Generally, when I'm writing, I have a notebook with me. So I hand write a lot of things that I hear around me or something that I hear of interest. I also go to church. I go to a fairly progressive church, and sometimes the sermons bring me to ideas. That's very helpful. And then I play tennis. So some of those conversations that I hear I can use as well. But I always write it down in a notebook and then I bring it home. I have a, you know, like a board in my office that I pin things on to try to remember what I was thinking was interesting.
How good of a tennis player are you? And you'd probably beat the crap out of me anyway if we played.
I'm not that good. I'm okay. I am as good as my partner is because I only play doubles now. I do not play singles. I never really played singles. I tried it once and it was just too hard. But I play at what's called the 3-5 level, which is pretty, you know, middle of the road for, you know, women over 40. And I have a good time playing. I mean, I'm not going to Wimbledon and except as a spectator. And I started playing tennis as an adult. So I think people who play when they're young are much better than I am.
Well, if you ever see me on the tennis court and you have a chance to play doubles with me, just turn and walk away, I guess.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll play with anyone. I have a lot of fun doing it. So you and I will do fine.
Small Silent Things, when somebody reads this book, what do you expect the reader to take away with this book?
What I would hope is that they would think about maybe concrete ideas that they've had in their life that I'm hoping to challenge a little bit. So my African-American mother in my book is experiencing deep trauma around something that happened to her in the past that she's been unable to deal with. And I would like people who don't have everyday experiences with an African-American woman to take that with them and think, you know, this is a human being. I find in our culture often for me that I'm kind of generalized, that people say she's Black, so she is this type of person. And every Black woman is different. Every Black woman is having a different experience. And I would like to expand the idea of what people's perception is of us. And then I would also like, for people to go away with a lot of questions and conversations that they want to have with their friends. I mean, I think because this book deals with war, it deals with violence, it deals with child abuse, sexual abuse, homosexuality, heterosexuality. I hope there's going to be a lot of conversations around all of those topics, because I don't think we talk about any of them enough.
What I liked about Small Silent Things is you never did over-describe anything. You leave that up to the reader to build their own place that you're talking about. How difficult was that?
Well, I thank you very much. That's a big compliment. I really appreciate that. I think all writing is difficult. And I don't think, for me anyway, I'm 100% aware of what I'm doing when I'm doing it the first time. So for me, I probably remove a lot of the writing once I get past, you know, my fifth draft or something. I'm taking things out. So maybe what isn't there now was there once, but I thought it was overdone. So, but that's a really nice compliment. I appreciate it.
Small Silent Things. Sounds like that you really put a lot into this, a lot of revisions. How easy was this book compared to other ones that you've written?
It was hard. I think it took about 3 years to write. And then I revised and revised and revised. And for me, I think a lot of the things that I had to read were very difficult. And I love reading and I love writers. And I think so much of the violence that I read about, stories of abuse that I read about, it was difficult to read. And so it was a hard book to write. And I'm happy I wrote it. I really am. But I said to my friend when I was writing it, I said, I think of all of the books that I've worked on, this is the book that I least want to get published. It's not an easy book to read, I don't think, ultimately. I think certain parts are, but then it gets a little bit difficult. So it wasn't the easiest book to write because it's heavy emotionally.
Well, I'm glad that Harper Perennial appreciated the book enough to print.
Yes, I am too.
If I wanted more information about Small Silent Things, more about Robin Page, do you have a website?
I do have a website. It is www.robin-page.com. And I have a fair share of information about me, but I also have something where if you have a book club, I'm happy to join people on Skype. And I was hoping some Cincinnati people would do that because I miss Cincinnati. And I also have, you know, I'll be posting any essays that I have published coming up or any events that I have coming up. And that's a good place to go.
Small Silent Things by Robin Page. This book, you know, as you're reading that, your mind, if you're like me, and hopefully you're not, but my mind kind of wandered a little bit to different areas, and then I would have to come back to Small Silent Things. Robin, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Robin Page and her brand new book, Small Silent Things.